We are live with another episode of the Tan and J-Man Show. As you can see, Tanner is not here. He is in, I don't know if it's sunny down there, but sunny San Antonio, Texas. So I am joined by my father. This is what, your third time on the show?
Yep, third time.
Third time. So Dan the Man, as Tanner likes to call him, is joining me. You've been to San Antonio a few times, and you really like it, don't you?
Yeah, it's a great place. The Riverwalk there, all the history involved. And I'm a foodie, so most of all the food of San Antonio. Tanner, have a great time while you're there. You're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, because I said something to him today, like, I think one of your favorite restaurants in the U.S. is there. What is it, Saltgrass or something?
Saltgrass Steakhouse. That was probably one of my favorite 10 years ago, but it's like most franchises, they kind of lose their luster over time.
Right.
But still pretty good. Pretty expensive, though.
Yeah. So maybe Tanner will hit up Saltgrass. I know Tanner likes his...
It's a good place.
He likes his bland food, as I like to say.
But, there you go.
Before we get going, I have a trivia question for you. It is a Cubs-related trivia question. So it's kind of a two-parter. It is, in the 10th inning of Game 7 of the 2016 World Series, what player led off with a single... And what player pinch ran for him who ultimately scored the game-winning run in the 10th inning of Game 7 of the 2016 World Series? Guy who led off with a single, was then pinch ran for. This guy tagged up and went to second on a fly ball, and then he ended up scoring on Ben Zobrist's double. So who hit and who pinch ran to lead off that 10th inning? Birdie Bogey is brought to you by Arlington Public House. Arlington Public House is upscale cuisine and cocktails with a casual atmosphere, located 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana. It is Monday night, is pizza night, so I'm sure they have a bunch of different kinds of pizzas there. They also do all sorts of specials. They do, I think it's half-price appetizers some nights. Over the weekend, their Friday night feature was a spinach artichoke ravioli, which was handcrafted ravioli bursting with a mix of spinach artichoke, zesty lemon, three cheeses, and a party of herbs and spices drizzled with rich brown butter sauce sprinkled with sun-dried tomatoes and roasted pine nuts, tangy pecorino cheese, and a fancy spinach chiffonade. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Sounds okay. On top. So that just kind of gives you a glimpse of the kind of food you get there at Arlington Public House. And as I said, a few weeks ago, I ate there and it was really good. So
that sounds great. And I'm glad you had to do that read, because I don't know if I would have gotten through half of that. But I've heard great things about the restaurant. I've never eaten there, but someday I will.
It's very good. Obviously, you've been to Giretti's. You've been to the Giretti's side quite a bit. But Arlington Public House has only been around for maybe... No, 2 years now, ever since Bryce took over. So he's revamped it a little bit, and it is, I think, my favorite restaurant in Rochester now.
Yeah, it sounds really good. Probably would be mine, too.
Let's start with, you know what? I should have pulled this up earlier. I believe the PGA Championship is this weekend. So let's talk. It is at Valhalla Golf Course, May 16th through the 19th. So PGA Championship, which is... one of the four majors. I'm going to bring up the odds here because Tanner always gives you the top. I think he usually gives you the top 10 as far as odds go for the PGA Championship. So here we go. The top guy, obviously, is going to be Scottie Scheffler. The dude's winning everything here recently. And, you know, he's just coming off a Masters victory. So he has the number one odds. Rory McIlroy has second best odds. Brooks Koepka. Third best, Xander Schauffele. Fourth best, Ludvig Åberg, who kind of became a name at the Masters when he finished in the top. I think he finished in the top five, maybe top 10. But then Jon Rahm, Joaquin Niemann, never heard of him. Colin Morikawa and Bryson DeChambeau kind of round out the top 10 there. We neither of us really follow golf. Who you taking? Just take a guy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Scheffler is amazing. Your guy won last week, the Wells Fargo, yesterday, I believe. And so maybe that will carry him on. You always do your book it prediction on Rory. So maybe his momentum from winning over the weekend will carry him on. But I think the top guy is going to be the top guy. And I don't watch it much, but I'll probably tune in a little bit on Sunday afternoon just to watch the last couple holes. That's when I really get into it, the last five holes or so, especially if it's
close. Yeah, the final five holes on a Sunday of any major, I usually tune into. I mean, it was kind of a boring Sunday with the Masters, so hopefully this one's a little better. But yeah, Rory, he came off a surprisingly, the Wells Fargo Championship, the purse is actually larger than the PGA Championship is. I don't know if that really means anything, because maybe the winner gets more at the PGA Championship than they do Wells Fargo. They just spread it out a little more at the Wells Fargo.
I heard the purse is $3.3 million or something.
Yeah, I think the winner gets $3.3 million. The total purse is $17 million. So that means they might take less guys that make the cut at the PGA, which would make sense. But this will be the J-Man's book it prediction of the week, getting it out early. Rory's going to win. He's going to win back-to-back tournaments, and he's going to win his first major since, I believe, 2014. I think it's been 10 years since he's won a major. I might be wrong on that. But this weekend is the weekend for Rory to get it done and hopefully break the J-Man's book of prediction of the week curse. Cause I've been probably doing this for 6 years now. I've been picking him. I've been booketing him and it has not gone very well, but
J-Man's ever won?
He has not won a major. I don't think I've even booked him for we don't really talk about the normal tournament. Sometimes we do. I don't think he's ever even come. I think he has like maybe one top 10, so it's been pretty bad, but maybe this time's the time. I know obviously the only one he hasn't won is the Masters, so he's won the PGA before. I don't know where he won at, maybe it was Valhalla if they've had it there before. But yeah. J-Man's book of prediction of the week brought to you by Indiana Farm Bureau insurance agent Travis Watchering for life, home, auto, business, renters, workers' comp, and farm insurance. Contact Travis at 219-869-4561. His email is travis.watchering@infb.com. Sticking with Travis Watchering a little bit, he has been at both of the Pacers' home playoff games here against the Knicks. So let's talk NBA playoffs a little bit. I know you haven't really followed the NBA since about 1998. And I haven't really followed it since Derrick Rose blew out his knee back, 12 years ago now. But we watched a little bit on Friday night. I don't even remember who was playing. I think it was Boston and Cleveland was on.
It was. Yeah.
We have two series tied at two. Two series are two games to one. Pacers-Knicks tied at two. Denver and Minnesota tied at two, and then you have Boston up 2-1 on Cleveland and Dallas up 2-1 on Oklahoma City. I did read that Donovan Mitchell, Cleveland's best player, is out with some sort of strain. I think it's a quad strain, something in his leg. So I think Boston's probably going to finish them off pretty quickly in five.
One question I had, and this shows my ignorance, how does this, I think it's semifinals, how does it go? Is it 2-3-2? Do you know how the series plays out?
See, this shows my ignorance too, because sometimes it's 2-3-2, but I think the finals is 2-2-1-1-1.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's really weird. I don't know if this is also like that. Maybe the conference championship series are like that, but I believe this is your normal 2-3-2. I know that I think the first round was 2-3-2, and I assume this one is too.
I know it used to be when I used to follow it. Of course, not all of the series were seven games.
I know. I know.
It was until they got to, I think most of them were five, and then they got to the finals, semifinals, finals, and I think it was seven then. So
yeah, I remember when I was growing up, it was always the first round was 5-game series, which made it kind of more interesting because you could have a chance to see more upsets. You never really did, because I think guys kind of took it a lot more seriously in a 5-game series because they know, holy crap, we could actually lose to an 8 seed. Now that it's a 7, you don't see it happen as much. We did a few years ago with the Heat. Was that last year? I think it was last year. I think about it. The Heat has an 8 seed making a run to the finals. Yeah, you don't see that very often. You do have a few higher seeds in there, like the Pacers, 6th seed. They're in the semifinal. They beat the 3 seed. Now, 3 seed was without their best player, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the entire season, the entire series. And then Damian Lillard, their second best player, missed at least one game. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they still beat them, so they're in. And now Pacers kind of got an unfriendly whistle in New York, game one. Some calls did not go their way, and I saw a lot of Pacers fans complain about it because it was a really close game. And I watched the game, and I didn't think it was probably a little unfriendly, but you're not going to get a friendly whistle on the road in the playoffs, regardless of where you're playing. So,
yeah. And that brings up an interesting question to me. When I think of basketball, to me, basketball has the best home field advantage. Mm-hmm. Because you're in this small court, you know, 20,000 fans. Right on top of you. I mean, I've been to Chicago Stadium a couple times to watch Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls play. And, I mean, it's deafening. We went to a Bulls game this year, and it was loud.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have the same influence that it used to? I mean, it used to be you could book it. If Chicago Bulls played at home during the playoffs, they were going to win. The question was who was going to win on the road, if any. Does it have the same? I know even in college, I think it's changed a little bit. I think mm-hmm. they've been able to, the game has matured that home field doesn't affect them as much, but certainly you look at stats and it's proven, you know, it's in the data, it's definitely home field advantage.
That's an interesting point because there were more top 10 teams that lost this year on the road. So I think it was harder for top 10 teams to go on the road. Now, we've been lucky the past 5 years where Illinois has been above 500 on the road in Big Ten play, which is unheard of. So that kind of skews our thinking. Of course, Purdue's very good on the road as well. In the NBA, I think Madison Square Garden's rocking. And the Knicks obviously were able to win those first two against the Pacers there, and then comes back to Indianapolis and the whatever that stupid arena is called now, Bankers Life. I don't even know if it's still Bankers Life, was absolutely rocking, and the Pacers were able to win. But then you look at the flip side, at the other series that's tied at two, Minnesota went into the defending champs, won the first two in Denver. Denver comes back after everyone wrote them off, and they have now tied it in Minnesota.
It is
kind of funny how that kind of played out there. But then you have Boston and Cleveland, and Cleveland was able to blow out Boston on the road in the Boston Garden, which is as tough to play as it is at MSG. And then I don't even remember the other series, Dallas, Oklahoma City. I haven't followed that one as much.
I wonder if it comes down to the maturity of the players, the veterans on the court, as opposed to the younger teams. I know when you watch Purdue this year, I mean, it was pretty much a given they could go on the road and win anywhere. And they did. They proved that. But you also had a very mature team, a lot of veterans. They knew how to handle the road noise and all of the things that went with travel. And so to me, that's got to help a little bit and might help in the NBA as well.
Yeah. So. And I've always said this about baseball and sometimes even football. A team that has not really been there before, like a Minnesota Timberwolves, I'd almost rather play on the road because it seems like sometimes the home team plays really tight.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. We saw that back. The one example that I can think of, 2008 Cubs, they won 97 games. They start the NLDS against a mediocre Dodgers team. I think they won 85, 86 games. And Cubs started tight. Mark DeRosa makes a terrible error. Ryan Dempster walked 6 and gave up a grand slam to James Loney. That team was so good, and they played so tight in those first two games and got down 2-0 that almost I feel like it helps to start on the road to kind of get your feet under you.
Yeah,
you don't have that nervous energy of the home crowd when you haven't been there in forever. It is an interesting dynamic for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking at the Cubs, when there's so much expectation, when you just, you know, I think they were the number one seed that year in the playoffs, won close to 100 games, and So then you go home and the whole Chicago crowd,
yeah,
you know, the most disappointed crowd at that time ever in history, maybe.
And it was the 100th anniversary too, which put even more pressure on them to do that. And that team was so much fun throughout that year too. And they just came out absolutely flat and tight, and you could tell they were nervous. And like the weight of the city was on them. And that was the exact opposite of what Joe Maddon created there. Cause I don't think Lou Piniella helped that out at all either. But then Joe Maddon comes in with his, you know, let the pleasure exceed the pressure, and that can, they just took off, which is exactly what they needed. So,
but try not to suck was their motto.
Yeah. That was their motto. 2016, just, hey, if you make a mistake, who cares? Where I think back in 08 and even 2007, they just felt so much pressure on them. And those were very old teams too, that they've been through. Mm-hmm. They'd been through the ringer. I mean, you had a 30-year-old Derek Lee, 30-year-old Aramis Ramirez. All of these guys had been around forever. And then you get a really young team that's almost too dumb to even realize what's going on. Too young to know what's going on. And that helps as well, because you have a Minnesota team that's so, going back to the NBA, that's so young. And you have an Anthony Edwards who I was talking to you about. You'd never really heard about him until I told you about him on Friday, that he is almost Michael Jordan reincarnate out there. The way he plays the game, his athleticism, his footwork, like you put side-by-sides of him and Jordan, and it is eerily similar how well they play. In fact, I have a stat that I favorited on Twitter about Anthony Edwards, who scored 40 points last night. Anthony Edwards now has as many 40-point playoff games as Magic Johnson, Tim Duncan, Karl Malone, Carmelo Anthony, Kyrie Irving, Damian Lillard, Jason Tatum, and Nikola Jokic do in their entire careers.
Wow.
He's 23 years old.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Of course, Duncan had, you know, Parker and Ginobili around him, Magic. Yeah. Magic wasn't really a scorer, but he had, you know, Kareem and Michael Cooper and James Worthy and Karl Malone at Stockton and those kind of guys. But so he's ridiculous, and he had to carry him last night, and they ended up losing. There was also something interesting that happened in the game that I was watching the highlights of it. The Minnesota was down 7 with 25 seconds left until halftime. They found themselves down 15 at halftime.
Oh, wow.
What happened was they gave up a 3, and then Denver got a steal and dunk with 2 seconds left. They tried to throw it the length of the court. Jamal Murray picks it off and hits a half quarter to go up 15. And that kind of ended the game right there.
Talk about a way to unfold at the end of the game.
Yeah. They probably would have felt okay if they were just down 10, but the way that the half ended, they just kind of imploded and folded in on each other.
That kind of reminds me of Illinois's last game this year against UConn.
Yeah.
I mean, they played with them the first half and second half. I mean, it was over in probably 5 minutes.
30-0 run. I did not see that coming. It sucks that's how the season ended, because it was so much fun. But just an absolute buzzsaw. I mean, that's exactly what UConn did to Purdue in the second half too.
Yeah, it is.
They didn't go on a 30-0 run, but they got up 20 at one point. So
that's a good team. That I don't know that we've seen a team like that for a long time.
That's probably one of the top 2 or 3 teams of the past 30 years or so.
Yeah, I agree.
The Villanova team back in 2018, which is crazy. The three of the best players from Villanova's team in 2017 and then 2018 are both playing, or all three playing for the Knicks right now. Jalen Brunson, who's from around where I live in Stevenson, Illinois, then Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo, who DiVincenzo won the MOP of the national championship game against Michigan when they blew out Michigan.
Okay. Well, it's obvious they know how to win, and
that's
a good part of being winning in college sometimes translates into winning at the next level.
So. Yeah, and having Jay Wright as your head coach, he prepares you about better than anyone ever has. So
yeah, I agree. Yeah, since we're talking about basketball, I have a couple questions for you. Number one, who's the most surprising team left in the semifinals on both the East and the West? Are the Pacers? I mean, Travis.
Probably the Pacers, because they were a 6 seed. Of course, Minnesota's actually the 1 seed out there in the West. Okay. Denver's the 2, and then you have Oklahoma City, who I think was the 3. And then I think Dallas was the 4. So it kind of went chalk out there in the West. And then, Dallas was the 5, but they were 1 game behind the 4 Clippers. So essentially chalk. But then you have the 1, 2, 4, and 6. So it is the Pacers, but I don't think anyone was overly surprised that they made it, because Milwaukee was playing without their top 2 players. And, I mean, the Pacers were just 3 games away from being the 2 seed anyway. So they're all real close together there in the East and the West, really. So
yeah. And now the Pacers have to go back to New York, right?
I believe so. If it is the 2-3, well, they probably would have to anyway. Well, unless it's the 2-3-2, then they would stay there. That's where it's got me.
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
So I'll look it up real quick.
It'd be a huge advantage for Pacers to go back to New York with a 3-2 advantage.
Yes. Yeah, because then you just have to win one. It is 2-2-1-1-1. So we
both run.
Yep.
Yeah. So then the final for the East and the West, is that the same lineup?
It probably is that way the rest of the playoffs.
For now on. Yeah.
Yeah, they go
like a lot of travel.
That is a lot of travel. Now they give them from Tuesday to Friday off.
Yeah,
that's nice. So they give them 2 full days off, and then they have a day in between. So that's the thing that just annoys you with the NBA, because obviously you don't want them playing back-to-back games in the playoffs. It's tough enough to do that in the regular season. But that's why the playoffs start in April and they don't end until the middle of June. You know, they take 2.5 months season. Do it. Who do you like in those series? The Pacers, Knicks, and Minnesota, Denver, both tied at 2.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to go with Denver just because of their experience and the fact that they won it last year. I have some friends that are Denver fans. And, I mean, that was a big thing for the city of Denver. They haven't had a championship since the Broncos, and basketball has really never been that good. So I would have to pick them. Didn't Minnesota win it the year before, though?
I don't think Minnesota's ever won a title.
Oh, it was Milwaukee. It was Milwaukee.
Milwaukee won. Yeah. I think that was 2 years before that. Yeah. Milwaukee won their first, and Denver won their first. Minnesota's looking for their first. Oklahoma City's looking for their first. Dallas has obviously won one. Boston's won a bunch. Cleveland won with LeBron. Pacers have never won one.
Never won, I would still have to go with the Nuggets. And just because Travis is my friend and I know nothing about the Knicks other than what you just said, I would go with Pacers. I think they're on a roll. I think they are the Cinderella team of the NBA playoffs. And so I'd be happy if they I've never liked the Knicks. I've never liked the Pacers either, but in my time experience in the NBA, you know, Michael Jordan playing the Knicks and then Michael Jordan playing the Pacers. And I think I dislike the Knicks more than I dislike the Pacers. I mostly dislike Detroit, by the way. Those were all their rivals, it seemed
like. I'll talk about Detroit here in a few minutes. I got some funny stuff on them, but it's hard to really go against the defending champs, especially now that they came back and tied it. Now they get to go back to Denver. Everyone was writing them off. They're saying, were they the worst champion ever trying to repeat? And if this was LeBron or Steph Curry, they wouldn't be saying that exact same thing. I'm rooting for Minnesota because I want to see Anthony Edwards keep playing. But I think Denver is the best team left, in my opinion. And then I'm going to take the Knicks just because they get to go back to MSG. Somebody's got to win a road game, obviously, if they want to win a win it. So especially obviously if the Pacers want to win it, they have to win a road game. But and then in the other ones, I think Boston finished it off pretty easily, and I think Dallas and OKC. I think they go at least 6, but give me Dallas in that one.
Yeah, I would go with both of those too. So. Yeah. Before I was a Bulls fan, before Michael Jordan came on the scene, I was a Boston Celtics fan. And I loved Bird and everything that the Celtics were doing. So I've kind of in the closet rooted for them. So I would probably root for them throughout, as long as they keep winning. I like the general manager. I don't know the coach much, but I like the general manager. And Brad Stevenson, is that who it is?
Brad Stevens. Yep. He's the
Stevens.
He's the president anyway. So
he's the president. Yeah. So I would probably go with Boston. Someday maybe the Bulls will get back there and I would go with the Bulls. And that's probably when I'd start watching again, when the Bulls would make a run in the playoffs. But I haven't watched literally since the late 90s. Yeah. I watched a little bit of playoff. That's about it, though. So
yeah, but we kind of got into it a little bit. Derrick Rose's MVP year. We kind of got into it. And that's when I liked the Bulls because he was so much fun to watch. And they were always the number one seed. But they have not won a home playoff game since he hit that buzzer beater in 2014. I think it was 2014. Something like that. They haven't won a home postseason game at all in like 10 years. It's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, and who was the guy? There was Derrick Rose and then Williams. What was the point guard?
They had Kirk Heinrich.
From Duke.
Oh, they had...
and he got in a motorcycle wreck.
Jay Williams. That was back early 2000s.
Yeah, I was watching him some with him and so disappointed he gets in this motorcycle wreck.
Yeah.
But he was a phenom. I mean, he was going to change the culture of the Bulls and... then he gets in the motor. And then Rose, too. He has the injury that really – I don't know that he ever recovered well from that injury.
No, he didn't. Yeah, and then then I believe he did it again, too.
I think you're right.
He was fun to watch. And those teams were good with, like, Joakim Noah, and they had Carlos Boozer, and maybe Boozer was a little later on. But, those teams were fun to watch. Tom Thibodeau, he's the New York Knicks coach. And he is, I think I saw Josh Hart, who plays for the Knicks. He sat for the first time in like 10 games, and it was like a 20-second rest on the bench.
Wow.
I'm sure he sat at the end of the game yesterday because they were getting blown out. But Tibbs plays his players. I remember he did that to Jimmy Butler. He ran him ragged. He just didn't sit. So that's why he's a good basketball coach. But
he is a good basketball coach. He's hung around for a long, long time. And coaches don't hang around that long. Yeah, I have a question for you that since we're talking about NBA, talked about the Bulls a little bit. So when I was on vacation a couple of weeks ago and I was talking to this guy that, he and I both were Jordan fans. So we kind of compared Jordan and LeBron. So when you talk about the GOAT, probably guys from your age to my age will always say Michael Jordan, but younger than you, because they've not experienced Michael Jordan, would they say LeBron? So my question to you, is it a generational thing or is it actual? Because I was just looking at Jordan versus LeBron. Of course, LeBron's played a lot longer than Jordan, but really the stats for Jordan predominantly are better than LeBron.
Scoring-wise, for sure.
Yeah, they play different positions.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that you can compare. Of course, the six championships mean something, and the fact that he won when he got to the championships, Michael did, and that's not true with LeBron. I mean, he's won what, three?
I think he's won four, maybe five.
Okay.
He's lost probably three or four, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's gone to a lot more than Michael, but Michael, when he got there, won.
Yeah.
And so what do you think about the whole actual or generational? I mean, certainly LeBron, if he retired 4 years ago, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. He's as good.
10 years ago, he's probably in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. He's as good as anybody. Came out at a high school. He never played college. And so he's good. There's no doubt about it. But I think for me, I see through the paradigm of my generation, and there's nobody better than Michael Jordan.
And I think it is a generational thing because you ask guys that were born, people that were born post 2000, I think they only remember LeBron. I would even say barely even remember Kobe in his heyday, in his prime. One of my earliest sports memories was Jordan's game winner against the Jazz to win the finals. I remember watching that in our living room. That was one of my earliest memories. And of course I love Jordan. I had a Michael Jordan jersey and a jersey And of course, he retired from the Wizards when I was 9. So it's not like I got to see him when he was doing his thing. I've grown to really dislike LeBron. It's probably nothing LeBron's done. I think it's just the way the media covers him. I would say they're definitely the top two ever.
Yeah.
Jordan was an absolute killer, though, where I don't think LeBron is that. LeBron had to surround himself by a super team down there in Miami just to get his first one with Bosch and Wade. And then I will credit him going back to Cleveland and winning one there. But then he goes to L.A. where he surrounds himself with Anthony Davis and a couple other guys. They win one there. So I think it's definitely a generational thing for sure. Because as you said, people born, 1992 and older would all say Jordan. Yeah. I'd say from about 95 up, I think a lot of them would say LeBron just because they don't. But they do. They played so differently from each other.
They're really
completely different positions that it's really hard to compare. I think LeBron's probably the greatest athlete to ever play and maybe a professional sport. Yeah. He's 6'9", 280 and doing this kind of stuff. He's a freak. So that's a really good question.
I would agree. Michael played in an era that defense was celebrated. Mm-hmm. I think it's beginning to change, but I think what's been celebrated is celebrity.
Yeah. I completely agree.
It's all about your image. And, now you got guys so powerful who are players that could actually get the coach fired with one email.
Yeah. And, which LeBron is that guy, and he already did it this offseason.
Yeah. So it's all about your brand.
Yeah.
Where Michael, it was all about competition. Yeah. It was all about winning. I mean, that guy loved to win. And every time he took the court, I mean, the game you cited against the Jazz, I think he had to go in. He had the flu. I think it was that game he had to go in and have an IV at halftime. Mm-hmm. And that was unheard of back then. It's pretty normal today.
Yeah. But
I mean, I think you just couldn't stop the guy.
Yeah. I think guys that aren't even like sick or anything still go in and get an IV or take a liquid IV or whatever just to hydrate a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. It's a completely different generation. I think, as far as the defense goes, I think the defense is probably just as good, but the offensive skill has gotten so much better than it's ever been that it's so hard to stop guys. Yeah. Especially in the postseason, I think it really ramps up a little bit defensively and how hard they play and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, a few more NBA notes here. The NBA draft lottery was held last night with the Atlanta Hawks winning the number one overall pick. We're in the play-in game, and if the Bulls would have actually just tanked that game and lost, they would have been the number one overall pick.
Oh, wow.
But the Bulls end up picking 11th. But the Detroit Pistons have had the worst record in the NBA. They lost 27 straight games at one point this year. They have had the worst record in the NBA each of the last three seasons, and each of the last three seasons, they have got the fifth pick in the draft, I saw a lot of people complaining about. However, that means the lottery is working because it's trying to prevent teams from tanking. And so it is kind of funny because Detroit could ended up with that absolute stud from San Antonio, that 7'4" guy, Victor Wembanyama. Could have had Paolo Banchero, who's with the Orlando Magic. He's one of the best players in the NBA now. And now in what's supposed to be one of the worst drafts we've had in 10 years, they're picking fifth. Again, it shows that the lottery is working because, again, they want to prevent tanking, and hopefully this will prevent teams from trying to tank.
Will that work in the NFL?
I don't think the lottery would work in the NFL because I think a lot of these guys know in the NFL, hey, if I don't win in 2 years, I'm out. They're going to can me. I don't think a lottery system would work. The lottery system is working in the MLB. It's the second year it's done it. Now, the Reds, who were pretty good last year, somehow won the number two overall pick, which kind of annoyed me because they shouldn't have, but they did. So, I think tanking has become an issue in Major League Baseball for sure. I mean, you look at teams like Oakland that aren't even trying to win. So they needed to do something to combat that, and hopefully the lottery will do it. But
I just think of Houston a couple years ago who were trying to tank, but Lovey had enough competitive juice.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let them lose, but it actually turned out better for Houston to win that last game because they didn't have the number one.
And Yeah, and it completely changed the trajectory of the Chicago Bears.
It really did.
The Bears end up getting the number one pick, traded to Carolina, pick up another number one, whom they end up taking Caleb Williams and Roma Dunes. So, it was almost like a Hail Mary they won on too.
Yeah, I don't know if he got fired because of that, but I know
probably not
calling him out. Yeah, he was done anyway.
Yeah, so. A few more basketball notes here. Bronny James, LeBron James' son, after averaging 5 points a game, shooting less than 30% from three, is sticking in the NBA draft. Every roster has him listed at 6'4". They measured him today. He's 6'1".
Oh, wow.
So no player in the history of basketball would have ever gotten drafted at that measurement, putting up those kind of stats, but someone's going to take a chance on him in the hope that they can somehow sign LeBron. That's kind of turned into an absolute circus. And then one more college basketball note. We talk about the NIL a lot, but great. This guy's name is Great. G-R-E-A-T. I don't even remember how you pronounce it. Out of Utah State. He transferred into Washington. Came out. He's the first guy that a public number figure has come out as far as NIL, and he's getting $2 million. Ozobor.
That's crazy.
Ozobor. Yeah. $2 million from the University of Washington. He's a good player, no one's worth $2 million, and might be worth
college.
Yeah. But if a guy like him's going to start getting $2 million, then college athletics are going to start being a little rough to watch.
Yeah.
I've already kind of tuned out college football to the point where I don't even really want to follow it anymore. I love college basketball mainly because my team's good. And hopefully that doesn't ruin it for me, but it's starting to a little bit. So,
yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I mean, it is concerning, because as Brad Underwood says, we don't rebuild, we reload. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's always that good. What about the development of a player over 4 years? What about the academic side of that?
Mm-hmm.
Now people are coming to a college because they get paid.
Yep.
And
that's exactly it.
I just don't know that that's healthy. I think probably it was an overreaction to the NCAA control over someone's image.
Yeah.
And there's always unintended consequences for every change you make. But I wonder if we'll have to come back to center.
Yeah.
And change it. I think we will. Maybe not that far from now.
Yeah, I think within Josh Whitman, University of Illinois athletic director, who is one of the brightest rising stars to the point where every single time a commissioner job opens in any conference, Illinois fans are scared that he's going to be hired he's on so many committees trying to not combat it, but kind of level it off a little bit. Because 1,000%, I agree. Players should be able to make money off their name, image, and likeness. They should absolutely be able to do that. It's never been put into place as a recruiting tool.
Right.
And here we are. Teams are tampering with other teams. They're no longer even – it's to the point where I don't even get excited when Illinois picks up like a high school commit, because it's like, okay, you're going to spend a year developing him. Then he's going to go put his name in to see how much money he can get somewhere else.
And how often has that happened, even with Illinois? I'm sure other schools
a lot.
Too. You have this freshman you have a lot of high regard to, and then he gets a better offer.
I don't think it's really the case this year, but Illinois goes to the Elite Eight, and they had to replace 13 of their 15 scholarship players.
That's crazy.
None of the losses are really like, oh, that's terrible, because, again, a lot of their best players were out of eligibility. Now, Coleman Hawkins is going to play somewhere else if he doesn't stick in the draft. And he's going to get a lot of money in NIL, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up at like a Duke or Carolina or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was at Illinois 4 years. Can't fault a guy for wanting to play his fifth year somewhere else, see what else is out there. Like, I don't blame him at all. It's going to get ugly. And Whitman said he thinks within around 5 years, which 5 years is a long time, but it'll kind of, they'll have stuff into place. They could have been working at this 10 years ago, though, and NCAA just sat on their hands because they didn't think it ever happened, and then it happened. So,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. My question will be, what kind of damage will it do if it waits 5 years?
Right. I
also wanted, you brought up Coleman Hawkins. This is what I love to see, is these athletes that are very, very skilled. Well, he graduated yesterday. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think that's huge. Also, a guy like Derek Fowler, former Cubs leadoff guy, champion, you know, championship guy. He promised his parents. He came out at 18, played baseball. He promised his parents he'd get a college degree. And mm-hmm. he walked yesterday at Penn State. So hopefully, you know, the academic side, because so many of these guys aren't going to make money playing basketball in the future. But they will if they get a degree at something other than basketball. So my concern is that this will even ruin the academia side of college and students. And, you know, one of my jobs is a professor. So I care about students who are actually going through and graduating. So,
yeah. And that's the thing. The reason why Luke Goody transferred from Illinois is because he graduated from Geis Business School in 3 years. Illinois, which is one of the top business schools in the country. Now he could still get his master's at, you know, a place that his uncle played at. And I think his grandpa played there. So he gets to actually go play where he's kind of grew up loving, and unfortunately has to be Indiana. And that's not going to be fun, but you just don't see those 4 year guys anymore. And we always are like, man, I'd hate to be a Kentucky fan. It's always the one and done's. Now everybody's a one and done. Purdue's about the only team that hasn't had attrition, really.
That.
And I know Purdue fans don't want to hear it, but I think it's going to catch up to them eventually. Because you can't have this success rate going forever where you have these guys for all 4 years. And it's going to catch up to them. It hasn't yet, but I feel like it's going to catch up to them. Hopefully. Right. Yeah. I'm hoping it catches up to him.
Yeah. Well, Painter's, to me, one of the best coaches in the country. And if anybody can keep players for longer, it seems like it would be him. But hope of something big that Purdue was building, because they've been getting better for the last 4 years, too. So I think that breeds hope in the players. Hey, if I just stick it out one more year, we're going to win a championship. And this year it did pay off. But down the road, what will it do? 3 years from now, 4 years, 5 years.
Switching gears a little bit to on this day, let me pull this up here. On this day in 1955, Mickey Mantle, one of the greatest players ever, hit three consecutive homers of at least 463 feet.
Wow.
I don't know how they calculated that back in the day, but
I don't either.
Supposedly they did. On this day in 1958, Stan the Man Musial is the eighth to get his 3,000th hit. That's pretty good. On this day in 1976, the ninth and final ABA championship was played. The New York Nets beat the Denver Nuggets 4-2. On this day in... It's not a great on this day this week. On this day in... Man, this is terrible. 2007, the PGA Players Championship was played at TPC at Sawgrass. Phil Mickelson won by 2 strokes ahead of runner-up Sergio Garcia.
And I remember watching that, the final 5 holes. That was a good tournament. Very good.
Yeah. On this day in 2012, Matt Kuchar won by 2 strokes ahead of Ricky Fowler, Zach Johnson, Martin Laird, and Ben Curtis at the 2012 PGA Players Championship. And that is going to do it for On This Day. It was a pretty weak one this week. But On This Day is brought to you by Mooney Woodcrafts. He can make all sorts of wood crafted stuff. I don't have the read pulled up. I'm sure Tanner's emailed it to me 1,000 times and I never pull it up in time. But Mother's Day is come and gone, but you can contact him to have him make stuff for Father's Day, Christmas, any other holiday you want to celebrate. So Mooney is pretty dang talented at that sort of wood craftsmanship. Let's switch gears here and talk a little bit of baseball. We have 15 minutes left. we're obviously huge Cubs fans. Why don't you just talk a little bit about what you think or what your thoughts are on the Cubs so far through 41 games this season?
Yeah. I mean, if I would have known the level of injuries they would have at this point of the season and realized they're only a half game out, I think there's 7 games above 500. Mm-hmm. I would have never dreamed that when you talk about the names that got injured, Belly and Suzuki and now Dansby. And I mean, it just keeps on. They just keep on having injuries. They announced more injuries today.
Yeah.
And then the bullpen injuries, Steele goes out the first game, misses most of the season so far. He's come back, I think, pitched twice since he's come back. And then the bullpen, I mean, I think Merriweather, him going out was probably the biggest injury to their pitching staff they've had. And then, you know, Alzolay today is placed on the injured reserve. And so I couldn't be happier about the season so far. And even this weekend they played the Pirates. And I thought, man, they didn't play well. But yeah, when you realize they scored 21 runs in 3-game series, that's not bad.
Pretty good.
Now, unfortunately, they've given up quite a few. And Saturday's game was probably the most disappointing because they came back from a four-point deficit, I think it was, or five, and ended up losing. So to me, I can't be disappointed for this season. We always say once they get healthy, they're going to be better.
They haven't gotten healthy is the issue.
Yeah, they've been pretty darn good. And honestly, with baseball, you never know who's next to go down.
Right.
What I love about Craig Counsell so far, it's next man up. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he prepares the players well. He plays his whole bench, no doubt. I mean, Mastroboni is starting tonight against a righty and instead of Mandrill. I mean, in maybe years past, they would prefer a guy like Madrigal over Mastroboni. And so Mastroboni has the hot hand right now, so play him. And so, I mean, I couldn't be happier, you know, based on the circumstances and where they are now. You know, I was hoping Milwaukee would be a whole lot worse, and it looks like they're going to be, because they've had some of the same things. They don't, they kind of have a no-name offense.
Yeah.
And I thought their pitching would be a lot worse, but been pretty good. So I think this is going to be a back-and-back battle throughout the season. Yeah. And maybe a team like the Reds will get hot. I'm telling you, I was pretty impressed with Pittsburgh's pitching staff until I realized they gave up 21 runs in three games.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, it looks right now anyway that it's going to be a two-horse race in the Central. I mean, Cubs and Brewers are separated by a half game. Then you have Pittsburgh 6.5 out, Cincinnati 7 out, St. Louis 8 out. But, again, to kind of piggyback off that, I mean, Alzolay is the 14th Cubs player to spend time on the injured list.
Wow.
Including Seiya Suzuki, who missed a month. Steele missed a month. Tyone missed a few starts. Missed probably 3 weeks. Wisdom missed about a month. And then you get Belly and Suzuki and Wisdom and Steele back, and then down goes Dansby Swanson.
Yeah.
So it is rough. And I agree with you that I think Julian Merriweather is their biggest loss in the bullpen, at least, because I think he'd be your ninth inning guy right now instead of heart attack Hector, as the guys have started to call him. And then Adbert, he's given up 7 or 8 homers in his 15 or 16 innings this year.
Yeah, and, it's been terrible.
It was definitely needed to put him on the injured list. I hope he's not actually hurt. I hope it's something that he can just kind of work through. Now, if he is actually hurt, that would make a whole lot of sense as to why he's been bad. He's been such a good reliever the past 3 years that it just kind of stinks that he's not been as effective, and it's hurt the entire bullpen as a whole too. Getting a guy like Steele back, and even Kyle Hendricks was pretty good yesterday, that moves Ben Brown to the bullpen, who has filled in admirably in the rotation, but he looked absolutely electric out of that pen on Friday night.
Three and two-third
innings, 6 strikeouts. I think by the end of the year, he might be your top guy back there. I mean, he throws 98, 99 miles an hour, nasty breaking ball, throwing strikes, which is always a plus when you're in the bullpen. I feel pretty good about where the Cubs are right now, half game out. I think Milwaukee's going to taper off a little bit. I'm hoping they taper off a little bit, because I think the Cubs, by and large, are the most talented team in the division. It's all about staying healthy and I feel like Council's teams can keep it together a lot better than David Ross's teams.
Yeah, I agree.
But
I agree. And by the way, we didn't mention Wicks going out now too.
Yes.
Another major injury.
Yeah.
The surprise is, as you said, Ben Brown, but I don't think enough people are talking about Assad.
He has been fantastic. He is leading baseball in ERA from a starting pitcher since July 1 of last year. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as you mentioned, Hendricks, I was thinking they're going to have to score 10 runs to win this game. He was phenomenal yesterday his first. I mean, he had no rehabs. I think it probably was a mind game for him. He had lost confidence. And so the time off, hopefully we'll do the same thing for Edbert. The time off will help him get his brain straight. And hopefully that's it.
So. Yeah. Baseball Savant, which is one of the maybe my favorite or second favorite baseball website, has every single advanced stat you could possibly think of. And today they came out for the first time average bat speed for some of these, for all every player in baseball. And we've never actually seen, they measured it in miles per hour. The guy who's leading baseball in average bat speed is Giancarlo Stanton, which that's not totally hard to believe considering he just hit a ball 120 miles an hour for a homer over the weekend. 80 miles an hour he's swinging that bat, which is absurd. Christopher Morel, however, is in the top five in baseball at 77 miles per hour. Then you have Nick Madrigal, who's dead last on the Cubs at 65 miles per hour. Listen to this. So they quantify a barrel, hitting a pitch on the barrel of the bat, as an exit velocity of at least 98 miles an hour with a launch angle between 25 and 31 degrees. Last week, Christopher Morel barreled four pitches, which is crazy. Nick Madrigal has that many in his four-year career.
That's not shocking.
Now, here's an interesting one. The guy in baseball who is dead last in average bat speed is Luis Arraez, and he has won back-to-back batting titles.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So it is sometimes about bat control, too, because he does have a Tony Gwynn quality about him.
He does.
With his ability to poke it the other way and just make contact at everything. But I thought that was interesting because you see a guy like Stanton, who's 6'5", 240, has over 400 career homers, hits the ball harder than anyone. That makes sense. But then you see a guy like Arraez, who's won back-to-back batting titles, with the slowest bat in baseball. So that obviously means his bat path is very good and his quality of contact is pretty good as well. So,
and he knows how those were
pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's amazing how they even came up with that. How do they measure that?
I have no idea.
Yeah. But to me, I think you said something interesting because in the MLB now it's all about speed. I mean, this weekend we saw the Pirates pitching staff, man, everybody threw 100 mile an hour, but they gave up 21 runs. And as you said, one of the best hitters in all of baseball has the lowest bat speed. To me, it's not necessarily, I mean, if you're hitting for home run power, you got to have bat speed. But to me, if you know how to drive the ball the way it's pitched, to me, that's of great value too, because probably so many of those hits that he gets are up field, opposite field. He goes with the pitch, and a smart professional hitter does that. So, I also wonder. Go ahead.
Here is a quote about the bat speed thing. Tristan Casas, who plays for the Boston Red Sox, said he had an oblique injury, which these are starting to pop up a little bit. I mean, say a Suzuki had one. They've been kind of becoming an epidemic in baseball. The doctor pretty much chalked it up to me being so big, rotating so fast so many times that I created a car crash within my body. It was a matter of time before this happened. He said it was something similar to like a pitcher needing Tommy John, just an inevitable thing that was going to happen sooner or later. So guys that are going in there trying to increase bat speed, we could start seeing more oblique injuries, kind of like we see with velocity of pitchers in Tommy John surgery. So there is a downfall to this.
Yeah, again, unintended consequences. The days of Tony Gwynn style of hitting might be over, but those are the guys that actually win, even though Tony didn't win much.
Yeah.
But again, if everything's calculated by speed, I mean, think of hobby bias. I remember when he first came up, I was shocked at how fast he swung the bat. But now he's gotten older, and he's probably not even on the list.
Violent.
Was violent. But how many times did he strike out? With bases loaded, it seemed like at times. So, I love the fast game. I love the, fast bat. I don't really love fast pitching against Cubs, but they hit it well. To me, pitching's all about location more than it is speed, and changing speeds. It's all about that. But anyway, interesting points. Yeah. I don't know how they measure that. I agree with you. I think there'll be some unintended consequences. And then you look at the 13-year-old boy that is a rising star in his little league, and they're trying to get him to throw curveballs and sliders and, what kind of career will he have? What kind of surgeries will he have to have a career?
It's funny you say that, because I literally saw a video of this guy bragging about his student. He's in eighth grade, and this kid is throwing max effort and throwing 89 miles an hour, and it just looks like he's going to throw his arm out. And he's probably going to throw his arm out by the time he's in high school. So
We got four minutes
left, so we got to be a little
quicker
here. Cubs play the Braves tonight. Thing that scares me about the Braves, Matt Olson hit 54 homers last year. He has four this year. Austin Riley, 37 last year, three this year. Ronald Acuna Jr., 41 last year, three this year. Ozzie Albies, 33 last year, three this year. So these guys are going to start hitting eventually, and I hope it's not this week or next week.
Yeah, I agree. I can't stand going to Atlanta. So it's one of the worst places I like to watch a game when the Cubs are playing there.
Yeah, and I hate it.
So they're going to have to pitch well. Atlanta is still, to me, probably one of the best teams in baseball. One of the top three, probably.
Yeah,
definitely.
Especially after getting whooped there last year and Suzuki dropping that fly ball.
Right.
And the Cubs win two of those. They're probably in the playoffs, and the Diamondbacks don't even have a chance to go to the World Series. But
absolutely.
Here we are moving on to the pick six real quick. We got 3 minutes left. I was terrible at time management tonight, which happens. But starting with Paul Skeens, who was the phenom that started for the – I almost said Steelers – for the Pirates on Saturday.
Yeah, amazing talent. I thought for the first three innings he was phenomenal. But I think the Cubs started to catch up with him. But I think he's going to be a real good pitcher. I will probably face him again Friday, I imagine.
I do too.
So,
yep. Paul Goldschmidt was in an 0-for-32 slump, and he is the next.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, I think he's a classic first baseman. I think he's starting to age out. But, man, you can't say too many bad things about him. But he is aging out. So
yeah. Wilson Contreras.
I love Wilson. I love his passion. Unfortunately, he got hit the other day in the hand, and he's going to be on the bench for a while. But I love his passion.
10 weeks.
10 weeks. Wow. I feel bad for the guy. I really liked him when he was a Cub.
So. Yeah. Then three Cubs here. We have Belly, Suzuki, and Alzolay. Belly and Suzuki just came back, and Adbert just got put on.
Yeah, Adbert, I'm glad he's – not pitching right now. So, because he lost it. Belly, man, without him, I don't know where we'd be. And Suzuki, I think he's a phenom. He's going to have a great career.
Yeah, Seiya had a hit in his first at-bat tonight. They just started, so.
Okay.
Pick six is brought to you by Proforma Print 2 Promo Group. For all your printing needs, contact Proforma Print 2 Promo Group. All right. Trivia question time, if I can remember what it was. What Cubs player in the 10th inning of Game 7 of the World Series led off that inning with a single, and what player pinch ran for him and ultimately scored the go-ahead run?
Yeah, I know the guy that got the RBI. I think that was Zobrist. RBI. But I'm trying to remember who got the hit. I'm just going to throw out Coughlin.
It was not Coughlin.
I saw him celebrating in all the videos, but I should know this very well, and I don't. Was it Wilson Contreras?
It was Kyle Schwarber, led off with
Kyle
a single.
Schwarber, wow.
And I almost said I was like Albert Almora pinch ran for him.
Oh wow, I should have known that. man.
Yeah, Coughlin, I remember, started game one against Corey Kluber, and it went very poorly. And I don't think he got another at bat the rest of the series.
But, I deserve a triple bogey for that. I should know that.
Thanks for watching the Tan and J-Man show. Thanks to my dad for joining me tonight. I believe Tanner will be back next Monday with another episode of the Tan and J-Man show. Have a fantastic week, everybody.